Today is Wednesday, February 17th, and you're listening to International Edition and the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, President Joe Biden reverses restrictive immigration policies.
Abraham applauds President Joe Biden for lifting travel restrictions and expanding U.S. refugee admissions.
Also ahead, celebrities and activists join Myanmar anti-coup protests.
It was the latest creative protest against the military coup, from taxi drivers, commuters, and even public transportation employees.
Plus, government forces battle Houthi rebels in Yemen's oil-rich Marib province. These stories and more are next. President Joe Biden's reversal of restrictive immigration policies implemented by the Trump administration includes welcoming more refugees to America, raising hopes for some of the world's most desperate people. But experts say it will take time to restore the U.S. refugee resettlement program. VOA's Aline Barros reports.
In a ticketing office in Nairobi, Kenya, Abdulrazak Noor Ibrahim keeps tabs on America.
I'm humbled by the trust and confidence you placed in me.
Originally from Somalia, Ibrahim fled war-torn Mogadishu in 2004 and became a refugee. He and his family were approved to travel to the U.S. for resettlement in early 2017, just as Donald Trump became president and signed proclamations restricting travel from several majority Muslim countries, including Somalia.
I passed all the interviews, health and everything. Then the former president introduced a travel ban. I have been here in the last 4 years, and before that, I have been here for more than 10 years, hoping that I will be resettled.
Ibrahim applauds President Joe Biden for lifting travel restrictions and expanding U.S. refugee admissions.
I am so hopeful things may change for us.
Starting in October, the U.S. is set to welcome up to 125,000 refugees a year, up from a 15,000 limit at the end of the Trump administration.
It's going to take time to rebuild what has been so badly damaged.
Some see challenges ahead, especially during a pandemic. Christopher Boyan is a communications officer at the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees.
There will be a number of challenges, including on the funding level, on the staffing level, on just getting these processes up and going again. But arguably the biggest or one of the biggest challenges at the moment to getting that program back to the robust levels that the U.S. administration has said it would like to see is the COVID pandemic.
Even so, U.S.-based resettlement organizations hope to be busy once again. Alicia Wren is the director of resettlement and integration at HIAS, one of the 9 nonprofits that help resettle refugees in the U.S.
Really looking forward to staffing back up. So what we're planning on is, with some of our existing partners, opening additional offices.
But backers of Trump's policies have misgivings, saying more rigorous security vetting helps ensure resettled refugees pose no danger to the United States. Laura Reese is a senior research fellow at the conservative think tank Heritage Foundation.
There was a review of the vetting program at the beginning of the Trump administration, and that needs to be done every few years. That should not be thrown out just because Trump's name was attached to it.
Refugee advocates say security concerns are overblown. Chris Shamera Vignaraja is the CEO of the Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service.
There is this claim, which isn't actually true, that refugees are potentially criminals or terrorists. The truth is that a refugee is far less likely to commit any sort of crime than a native-born American.
In Nairobi, Ibrahim hopes living in limbo will soon be over.
I would love to go and settle in another country to leave the life of uncertainty that I have lived with here for so many years and live a better life.
Eleni Barros, VOA News, Washington.
The Biden administration is extending help for homeowners struggling to make mortgage payments during the virus pandemic. AP correspondent Sega Mogani reports.
Census Bureau figures show nearly 12% of homeowners with mortgages were late on their payments. The White House says some 10 million people who are behind will get urgently needed relief. On his first day in office, President Biden had extended a ban on foreclosures of federally guaranteed mortgages to March 31st. He's now pushed it to June 30th. The White House says it's also giving borrowers more time to ask for a pause or reduction in payments. The actions today do not address a moratorium on evicting tenants behind on rent payments. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Former President Donald Trump slams Senator Mitch McConnell as the GOP divide deepens post-impeachment. AP correspondent Mike Gracia reports.
In response to this,
President Trump is practically and morally responsible for provoking the events of the day.
Former President Donald Trump has launched a blistering dress-down of Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell. In a statement released by his Political Action Committee, Trump says Mitch is a dour, sullen, and unsmiling political hack, and if Republican senators are going to stay with him, they will not win again. McConnell made his statement Saturday on the Senate floor after he joined 42 other Republicans to acquit Trump of inciting the January 6th riot at the U.S. Capitol. McConnell said he voted to acquit Trump because the Senate has no jurisdiction over a former president. Mike Gracia, Washington.
Also in the United States, another winter storm front is blowing through the nation's midsection, where power grids haven't adjusted for the wild weather swings that come with climate change. More than 100 people live in areas covered Wednesday by some type of winter weather warning. Millions remain without power in the record-breaking cold, mostly in the southern state of Texas. At least 20 people have died from cold or in accidents on icy roads. Opponents of Myanmar's military coup, including celebrities, veteran activists, and students on Wednesday, rejected the army's assertion that there was public support for overthrowing elected leader Aung San Suu Kyi and said their campaign would not burn out. This as the U.S. and the United Nations condemned fresh charges against her. Libby Hogan of Reuters reports.
With bonnets up and hazard lights flashing, cars appeared to be broken down across Myanmar's largest city of Yangon on Wednesday. It was the latest creative protests against the military coup, from taxi drivers, commuters, and even public transportation employees. Their aim was to block military and police from moving in on protesters. Min Chaw joined the demonstration downtown.
I think the civil disobedience movement is efficient because the government officers are joining the protest and the junta has to ask them to go back to work. We, the protesters, need to keep going.
Tens of thousands of demonstrators flooded the streets of Yangon and were joined by celebrities and veteran activists. On Tuesday, at a press conference, a military spokesperson said they would hold a fair election but gave no date. Police filed an additional charge against detained leader Aung San Suu Kyi of violating a natural disaster management law, on top of earlier charges of illegally importing 6 walkie-talkie radios. Recently, the army has given itself extensive search and detention powers, and there have been penal code amendments aimed at stifling dissent with tough prison terms. Despite this, demonstrations have continued in towns across the ethnically diverse country. The civil disobedience movement has been growing with strikes that are crippling many functions of government.
That's Libby Hogan of Reuters. This is the Voice of America. Libyans are marking the 10th anniversary of their 2011 uprising that led to the overthrow and killing of longtime ruler Muammar Gaddafi, with eyes on a recently appointed government that would lead the country through elections late this year. Violent street protests have erupted in some Spanish cities following the arrest of a rap artist who has barricaded himself at a university with dozens of supporters to avoid prison. He has portrayed his case as a fight for free speech.
This is Science in a Minute.
If you struggle with being obese or overweight, you know just how difficult it can be to lose the pounds needed to achieve and maintain a healthy body weight. Over the years, many desperate to lose pounds have tried diets, medications, and even surgical procedures. A large international team of scientists have reported promising results in their tests of a new drug called semaglutide. Almost 2,000 people from 16 countries participated in the tests. Test results published in the New England Journal of Medicine show that 3/4 of those who received doses of the new drug lost more than 10% of their body weight, while 1/3 of them lost more than 20%. The study authors call the drug a game changer and suggest there hasn't been any other drug that has come as close to providing this level of weight loss. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. The new head of the World Trade Organization says these challenging days are no time for, quote, business as usual, unquote, noting that, quote, deep and wide-ranging reforms are needed, unquote, within the World Trade Body. More from VOA's Mariama Diallo.
I'm very proud to be the first African. I'm proud to be the first woman.
Newly appointed World Trade Organization Director General Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala says while she's humbled and proud of her history-making role, it's important to have the competence to deliver results.
I'm focusing on delivery. I'm focusing on getting results. And I want to make sure that people remember my continent producing the first leader of the WTO that made a difference.
And this is not the first time the 66-year-old has made history. She was the first woman to serve as finance minister for several years and also the first female foreign minister in Nigeria. She also spent 25 years at the World Bank before returning to her country in 2003. On Twitter, an outpouring of support from bank officials celebrated her appointment. Okonjo-Iweala says trade is about people and lifting those who have been marginalized, such as women and owners of small and medium-sized businesses, into the mainstream. Fellow Nigerian Nkoyo Toyo, a former member of parliament and former ambassador to Ethiopia and the African Union, has worked with Okonjo-Iweala and says she is a trailblazer.
Ngozi is someone who is a great innovator. Ngozi, it's more about what can I do differently and what change can I bring to a very difficult situation.
Toyo says she will bring a fresh perspective to issues such as international trade talks in the face of persistent U.S.-China conflict.
I think the unique position Ngozi finds herself in is trying to ask the question, what about the rest of the world? And that gives her the space.
She will have to quickly address the devastating impact of the coronavirus pandemic, where she says the WTO can do a lot.
So a very top priority for me would be to make sure that we come to some solutions as to how the WTO can help make vaccines, therapeutics, and diagnostics accessible in an equitable and affordable fashion to all countries, particularly to poor countries, because right now we are lacking equitable access.
The appointment, which takes effect March 1st, came after U.S. President Joe Biden endorsed her candidacy, which had been blocked by former President Donald Trump. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Sudan this week accused Ethiopian troops of crossing their border amid a land dispute between the neighbors. The dispute adds to tensions stemming from Ethiopia's massive hydropower dam, the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam, on a Nile River tributary, which Egypt and Sudan says threatens their supply of fresh water. Naba Mohideen has this story from Khartoum.
This week, Sudan's Ministry of Foreign Affairs issued a communique saying Ethiopia made what the ministry called a disrespectful incursion into Sudanese lands. Ethiopian troops allegedly crossed the border at Al Fashaga, an area that sits on the border between northwestern Ethiopia and eastern Sudan. The Ethiopian government didn't deny the incursion, but called on Sudan to stop its own incursions across the border. The dispute over Al Fashaga goes back at least 50 years, but has flared up again since December, shortly after tens of thousands of refugees from Ethiopia's embattled Tigray region began crossing into eastern Sudan. In January, Sudan said an Ethiopian military aircraft overflew its territory, while Ethiopia accused Sudanese troops of crossing the border and looting from Ethiopian citizens. However, Sudanese political analyst Abbas Mohammed, based in Qatar, thinks both Sudan and Ethiopia could not stand the costs of a real war.
مطابخ الغرار في الخرطوم أو أديس أبابا تعلم أن الذهاب إلى الحرب هو غفزة في المجهول.
Mohammed says decision makers in Sudan and Ethiopia know very well that going to war is nonsensical. There is economic development in Ethiopia and democratic change in Khartoum. Any war would threaten the gains in the two countries. But the ruling leaders are looking for enemy to defuse the internal conflicts. The border dispute adds to existing tensions over Ethiopia's hydropower dam on the Nile River tributary. Egypt and Sudan say the dam would reduce the flow downriver and threaten their supply of fresh water. Khartoum-based political analyst Al-Fatih Mahmoud says the dam is the driving factor behind the tensions. Mahmoud says the Gerd Dam is the reason behind it, and that dispute could push the two parties into a skirmish and to sit together at a negotiation table, though it never has resulted in a war. Sudan and Ethiopia have welcomed an initiative by South Sudan to mediate the border dispute. However, Ethiopia said it wants an immediate withdrawal by Sudan's military from the border area in exchange for starting negotiations. Naba Muhyiddin for VOA News, Khartoum, Sudan.
China is promising to provide its Sinovac vaccine to Central and Eastern European countries scrambling to obtain COVID-19 vaccinations for their populations. Beijing's pledge came at a summit earlier this month with 17 Central and Eastern European nations in what experts see as part of a global effort by Beijing to expand influence and diversify China's trading partners. VOA's Adita Dunelari reports.
China's pandemic diplomacy comes at a time when Central and Eastern European countries face increasing pressure from their populations for life-saving vaccines. But their inability to procure the necessary doses has given China an opening, says analyst J. Stephen Morrison.
You know, the Western states, the most powerful European and North American countries are hoarding their supplies of vaccines. The Chinese are coming forward and aggressively marketing theirs and using them as diplomatic tools.
Distributing the Chinese vaccines is aimed at generating goodwill, but Beijing is also trying to drive a wedge between the region and its Western allies, says expert Valbona Zanelli.
You know, in Southern Europe, in Central Eastern Europe, it's been this idea of pushing the dissatisfaction with the European Union and the way that the European Union has handled, vaccination, but also previously the crisis.
Since 2012, China has offered direct investments and loans for major infrastructure projects in Central and Eastern Europe, and promised increased trade, but almost a decade later, these projects have produced few jobs or economic boost for local businesses. Now there are growing concerns over Chinese business practices that ignore labor rights and environment protections.
In most of cases, these are loans that will be paid back from the governments of these countries. Non-transparent contracts where we see Chinese companies implementing the projects, in most of the cases, Chinese labor force and Chinese raw materials.
When it comes to trade, Zanelli notes a deepening imbalance in which Chinese companies are the main beneficiaries and local businesses have seen little increase in their exports to China. That may be about to change as China looks for new import partners to reduce its dependence on U.S. imports, says J. Stephen Morrison.
They're turning away from that deep interdependence. They're trying to lower that and they want to find replacement. Well, maybe then there's a more serious engagement here when they come and talk about export markets into China from Eastern and Central Europe. Maybe this time around it's more serious.
Morrison adds that China took a major gamble by rolling out its vaccines before completing the rigorous full trials. Failure, he warns, could be detrimental and not just for China's reputation.
That could destroy the public trust and confidence in vaccines. It could begin to set us back. The world needs to move forward towards a common achievement of herd immunity, of getting to 75 or 80% of coverage with safe and effective vaccines.
As China pushes to expand its influence, experts stress the need for a more assertive engagement from Western powers to ensure that China is not using weaknesses in Central and Eastern Europe to gain an unfair advantage in the global marketplace.
The most important thing is creating a level playing field, a transparent playing field for the rules of the global economy.
In Europe and beyond, where China has ambitions, experts say Beijing needs to prove that it is willing to embrace its responsibilities of being a global power that plays by the rules. Arita Dunelari, VOA News, Washington.
Heavy fighting between government forces and Houthi rebels in Yemen's oil-rich Marib province, close to Saudi Arabia, has sparked doubts over UN-led efforts to resume negotiations on ending Yemen's war. Observers say that while Saudi Arabia may in some ways want to end its involvement in the conflict, it needs security assurances which the Iran-backed Houthis are unlikely to meet. Dale Gavlak reports from Amman.
Heavy fighting between government forces and Houthi rebels in Yemen's oil-rich Marib province, close to Saudi Arabia, has sparked doubts over UN-led efforts to resume negotiations on ending Yemen's ongoing war. Observers say that while Saudi Arabia may in some ways want to end its involvement in the conflict, it needs security assurances, which the Iran-backed Houthis are unlikely to meet. Dale Gavlak reports from Amman. The Houthi offensive that began earlier this month to seize Mara province, some 120 kilometers east of the capital, Sana'a, has met stiff resistance from troops of Yemen's internationally recognized government. Marib is the last stronghold of the government. Observers say the Houthis, a Zaydi Shiite movement fighting the Sunni Muslim-majority government, want to wrest control of Marib and its oil fields, as well as close off Saudi Arabia's southern border to give them leverage in possible peace talks. But they are also suffering heavy casualties. The United Nations Special Envoy for Yemen, Martin Griffiths, said he was extremely concerned about the hostilities, especially at a time of renewed diplomatic momentum, given the Biden administration's decision to end support for the Saudi-led offensive and revoke the U.S. designation of the Houthis as a foreign terrorist group. Kristen Dewan, a senior resident scholar at Washington's Arab Gulf States Institute, says she believes that Saudi Arabia would like to extricate itself from the conflict. But the Houthis have also launched attacks on Saudi territory, showing increased daring and technical prowess.
I think to some degree Saudi Arabia is ready to make a deal. They've scaled back. They were hoping to get out of this. If they can just get out with some security assurances, the problem is exactly how do you get the Houthis to the table, especially when they seem to be having the upper hand and gaining. You could look at what's going on around Marib and some of these other places.
Ahmed Nagy, a non-resident fellow at the Malcolm H. Kerr Carnegie Middle East Center in Beirut, says international pressure for the Saudi-led war is needed beyond the Biden administration's decision to end support.
Bringing peace to the country seems elusive. Today, Saudi Arabia is suffering a lot, especially the Saudi communities who are in the southern borders of the kingdom. Ending the support is not enough, because today the conflict in Yemen is not just between Saudi Arabia and some parts inside Yemen. It became larger and fragmented, which needs a comprehensive approach to tackle it.
Yemen's war started in 2014 when the Houthis seized the capital and much of the country's north. A Saudi-led U.S.-backed force intervened in 2015 to dislodge the Houthis and restore the internationally recognized government. The conflict has killed some 130,000 people and spawned what the United Nations calls the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Dale Gavlak for VOA News, Amman.
Scientists would gain vastly expanded capabilities to identify potentially deadlier mutations of the coronavirus under legislation advancing in Congress. The U.S. now maps only the genetic makeup of a minuscule fraction of positive virus samples, a situation some experts liken to flying blind. It means the true domestic spread of problematic mutations first identified in the United Kingdom and South Africa remains a matter of guesswork. Such ignorance could prove costly in the race to vaccinate Americans before virus variants become dominant here. The House COVID-19 relief bill will provide $1.75 billion for mapping virus genes, while a Wisconsin Democratic senator has introduced legislation to spend $2 billion. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great day.
Hi, this is Press Conference USA guest host Kim Lewis. Join me and VOA senior TV correspondent Chris Simpkins as we discuss the great migration of African Americans with author and historian Jesse Holland. We'll discuss how it shaped the political, social, and cultural landscape of America. Listen this Saturday and Sunday on Press Conference.